Wi-Fi. So right now, Martin's job is to keep me focused on financial planners. Now, I'm going to give you some material before we break for tea, which will show that next generation IFAs, which is where I'm taking this, okay, is a certain type of IFA. You have to be the lead, one of the leaders of the business, one of the directors or partners, or if you're part of a network, you're responsible for your own positive solutions thing, okay, and you're the boss, number one, and you have to have stopped fretting about RDR. That's what next generation means. RDR is over as far as you're concerned. It's done, it's finished. We know exactly what we're going to do. We may not have finished it all yet, but in our head, it's done. Okay, so I don't want any whinges about RDR on next generation. I don't mean within, I don't want them in the inner circle, but does that make sense? So that's my market. Yeah, really focused. So tell me what the service would be you're delivering. The brilliant service.
What I'm trying to do, I haven't got very far yet, is, I say on my cards, getting you from A to B. So A is today,
right.
The person or the client's current lifestyle, current goals and dreams and aspirations.
Okay.
And B is the future and achieving those goals, dreams and aspirations.
Okay.
And my role is to help the client first identify those goals and dreams and then work out how we can get there.
Okay, what's brilliant about the service that you structured to deliver all of that? I don't mean good enough, because good enough is not good enough. If you're going to play distribution, you've got to be brilliant at something in the service. What's the brilliant service?
Well,
it's hard, isn't it? It's hard.
In the way that I've structured it so far is the A part, if you like, is today. You're giving the client for the first time a picture of what the future might look like if they take no action.
What's the professional skill set you're going to have to develop to deliver that kind of service?
Probably more of the people skills, I would say.
I would strongly counsel you. Beyond recommend, strongly counsel you to get professional coaching level type qualification. Whether you call it life planning, I don't care what you call it, but it's coaching. So not just to do it because you're a really nice guy and you love the people, because that's a given, is how do I stack up against a coach, a professional qualified coach? And if I don't, then that's not brilliant. That's not service. So if that's where you want to go, then you need to learn professional coaching skills. And there's loads of coaching universities, online, offline, great coaching teachers. But my recommendation, if that's what you love, think you love doing, then you need to take it seriously. Because otherwise, they will never tell whether you're any different from anybody else. And you just get, you'll end up with a very mediocre business. And it just won't do what you want it to do. Does that make sense? So if that's the game you're playing, then you're up against...
That's the game I'd like to play.
Yeah. But it's doable. That's the side. What's yours? What's your distribution method?
With this distribution, I'm moving towards niche. I'm nowhere near there, but I've already decided that I've joined SOLA, which is the Society of Later Life Advisors. So that puts me in the post-retirement market.
Okay. So tell me about the people. Who are they?
They're retired. Some are older, elderly, but semi-retired.
Okay.
Assets under management.
Right.
Not terribly risk averse, so a few that are.
Tell me more about the people, not the investment.
There's a wide range. They're not financially astute.
Okay.
They want advice.
Okay.
They want some level of exploration, but not a great deal.
Right.
They want to be told what to do.
Okay.
But only once they trust me.
Right.
And then when they do trust me, tell them.
Right. So you're focusing on a market type of person. What you'll need to learn, and the ideas are great because they're beginning to hone down. We spend a whole morning on what exactly is a niche and how do you actually identify it. And you're going to learn four things. You might want to jot them down very quickly. Demography. Psychography. Psychography, as in psycho. Behaviour. And industry sector. Okay, now, whenever I ask any IFA, tell me about your niche market, they start talking about psychography. That's one of four elements. Unless you understand what the other three are and how to use them, you ain't got a niche market. And
they'll how far down do you have to go to make it really effective?
What Martin would tell you would be the winners, not, you can create a great business, make a load of money, but the winners are those who know how to niche within a niche within a niche and do it brilliantly. As long as the niche within the niche within a niche has enough numbers for you to work with.
And then what do you do? Because I think I'm starting that progress.
Yeah.
Now identifying the top end, the old 80-20 rule.
Yes.
The 20 aren't necessarily in the niche, but they're getting closer.
Yeah.
But what do you do with a tail? Because I've got a tail of maybe 80 clients who are, a few years ago, I thought they were reasonably popular. Now I think they're okay.
That's a whole workshop on that. That's how long it takes to learn this stuff, and I know you'd love me to give you a quick answer, and I'm just not that good enough. That really is. We spend a whole day just on how do I identify my niche market and what the heck do I do with the rest. That's 7 hours worth of work. It really, and the reason why I used to ask that same question was because nobody sat with me for 7 hours and showed me, well, here's how you do this stuff. And it just annoyed the heck out of me. What do I do with this stuff? Niche market, take at least half a day just to talk about the concepts and to understand what does a niche actually mean, and have I got one? And if I don't, how do I get one? And then we'll spend a whole day saying, once you've selected a niche, how do I package my dream message? Then another day, is now I've packaged my dream message, how do I get it out there to the market? This is quite hard work. And the reason, the beauty is that they don't know how to do it. They think they do and they don't. Which is why they'll never earn more than 60 to 100K. Just won't do it. They'll never break through £500,000. And each of you in this room is capable of breaking through £250,000 per advisor in your small business and having a great life and a fulfilling relationship with the client, and clients gravitating to you and loving you. But it takes time to learn the process. I'd love to give you a slick answer to it, and I'm just not that good enough. I'd love to. Let me just move on. Okay, we've had two great examples over here of trying to find out a niche market and working in service, and we're wrestling with those two concepts here, but the beauty is actually making a decision. That's the beauty. Whereas your peer group are not making any decision at all and never know where they're working. So give me one example from each table of whether your distribution or product, and within the distribution or product, tell me more about it. One from Simon's table. Do you want to select someone?
Savio.
We know yours. Are you distribution or product?
It's distribution.
Distribution. And so just listen up to Simon, to Savio. So tell me about your market. Who are they?
Well, it used to be just doctors. But now I've tried to focus it, and so it's now I'm aiming for doctors over the age of, say, 45.
Okay. And
in London.
Anything you want to tell us about the quality of service? How are you making that brilliant?
Well, what I'm trying to do is sort of make online viewing of their products and assets available. By being a member of True Potential, they have a website situation, so people can just go in and look at that, what they have, and see things quickly.
Okay.
And also one of my doctors, quite a few actually, but they basically say they don't like the learning curve of having to re-understand what financials actually say. So by having an easy-to-use, straightforward system that's constant, it'll just be easier for them. So that's what I'm trying to promote.
Very good. Thank you, Savio. One from this table. Craig, who are you going to select?
It's Tim's turn, I think.
Tim?
It seems that before I got here, I'd already kind of determined that it was a market-based approach.
Okay.
Although when you first set it, I was struggling between market and service.
Okay.
the reason I chose market is the reason why I said the ideal client was they're easy to target, easy to find. I'm involved in the business community at the moment anyway, and I can target more policy solutions to meet their pressures and problems.
Okay.
And can automate some of the processes and have a clear service proposition for them.
And the market you've selected?
Very specific.
Business owners aged 50 to 60, living around Portsmouth, no further afield than Peterfield, Chichester, Southampton or Winchester. They read the Times or the Telegraph, and the children leaving home, and their mortgages are almost paid off or has been paid off.
Okay. Reasonably specific market. So market driven. One from your table. Do you want to choose someone, Stephen?
Maybe Nicholas.
Nicholas?
Yeah. I was really quite pleased that Martin arrived half an hour ago. We were just having a bit of a discussion. What I do is I market within the family. So if the client is the father or the grandfather, we'll market through the grandfather to the son and ultimately to the grandchildren. So we're doing effectively dynastic planning, I suppose, really.
Okay.
And selling fundamentally on service.
Okay, and do you want to tell us something about your service that makes it more than good enough?
Well, we measure by the fact that the only time we lose people is when they die.
Okay. So tell us what you do. I'm your client. What is it about your service that so fascinates and delights me?
Well, this was the question asked of Martin, because I find it very difficult to elaborate that or articulate that other than through their experiences already.
Right.
So with clients that have been on a journey with me, as we've learned, they end up being our silent salespeople.
Okay.
But it's I found it very difficult to articulate that to you perhaps as a potential brand new client without that third party family endorsement.
Okay. So Martin's comments.
You're a family advisor.
Okay.
You're marketing to the family.
The family advisor. Okay. So you're multi-generational.
Yeah.
Family. Is that how they perceive you?
Yes, that's how I perceive ourselves, and that's how they must perceive what we do, because they refer us up,
right,
and they refer down, and they refer across to their trustees.
I'm with you. Okay, so focus entirely on this family tree and the multi-generations of it.
And then we cross to another family tree through trusteeship.
Through the trusteeship. That's really interesting. Can you see that? Market-driven. Okay. Be interesting to hear in 6 months' time how you articulate the service.
So would I.
Before I ever meet with you.
Yeah.
So could you knock my socks off with the delight of your service before I've ever sat down and fallen in love with you and your business?
Yeah.
How would you do that is an interesting question. And it's the questions that force us to think hard. One more from this table. We've beaten up David and Gary here, and they're wrestling with their market and service, yes?
Yeah.
Okay? But they're really beginning to get it. Okay? So do you want to give us one more from the two of you? One of you?
Yeah, shall I go?
Yeah.
Mine is distribution, market and service, and it's essentially city lawyers because of the high-end demographics.
Right.
The premium service that they will enjoy and insist on.
Right.
There's less numbers to have to worry about. It's more specific and more targeted, and the need to understand the service that particular market expects and simplify their life as much as possible. A busy lawyer, a city lawyer, doesn't have time to brush his teeth, let alone look after his investments and family protection.
Yeah. You think Paul's joking. I have a couple of very close friends who have been city lawyers, very close friends within my church group, and one of them, really bright kid, just unbelievably bright, came very, very close at the age of about 32 to a nervous breakdown. Really close. You know, there were about 10 of us that were close to him, and you spend time with him and sit with him and listen to him and talk to him and just cry with him, and because of what being a city lawyer meant, it nearly killed him. So you're right, they don't have time to brush their teeth, and so time is one of the issues. Do you want to share yours? Are you distribution method or are you product method? Positioning.
started off with distribution, but I've been sitting here thinking about it further and wondering actually whether product-driven is more appropriate. The thing that bothers me is the fact that it says on here no perceived value, but I'm not sure that that's necessarily the case, because I'm thinking Harper Sandstone may be product-driven, but it's not a low-quality product. People that use it love it and go back to it because they feel that it's a high quality. So price doesn't have to be low either. Is that a reasonable way of thinking or not?
That's a really good question. What is it about product that makes me suggest that in the client's head, the product, rather than the company, is low perceived value? Why don't we examine that? Because that's going to be fairly major to your decision, isn't it, from a business point of view. Let's turn to page, I promise we'll come back to that, because it's on the future pages. Let's turn to page 23. We're now in framework 3. How do we drive your revenue so that the revenue quality you create with this wonderful dream and this vision that you have and this positioning you have and owning space in people's minds and hearts creates loads of revenue for you, the business, for the quality of the life you're going to lead, for your support team, and all the other things that are necessary in a business, for your alliance partners. How do you create the quality of revenue that the business needs? Well, first of all, you need to understand what it is you're really selling out there. And the challenge that I've had as a financial planner, I lost a business that most of you know back in the early 1990s, and it just nearly killed me. I was ill in bed for 2 weeks. We were down £250,000, that was the liability. Even if you say it quickly, it's a lot of money. Certainly was back in 1990. And, I was lucky to hold my marriage together, frankly. Lucky I still have a wife, because she just thought I was a complete lunatic, and I probably was. One of my good friends at the time, Jeremy Hoyland, the IFA I was talking about, came up to me and sat me down and he said, before I try and help you, let me just make a statement to you. You've just sacrificed your family on the altar of your ego. And I thought that was a brilliant phrase. You've just sacrificed your family on the altar of your ego. Never forgot that. Only because he'd done much the same thing, so it hurt him too. But I pulled myself together and, eventually paid back all the debt. And that was the basis of the Soul Millionaire story. That's what made me write the book. I paid it all back, everything that I owed, and more. I said to my wife, I'm going to declare bankruptcy. She looked at me and she said, how can I put this? Not if you want to stay married to me, you won't. So that wasn't an option. I said, you owe the money, you pay it back. That's what integrity is all about. It took us 4.5 years and we did it. And out of that came an amazingly good feeling. But I learned some things from Chris Woodhams, who then took me on board and coached me to become a business person, an entrepreneur, and not personality-driven financial advisor. And what he taught me was, the reason for this whole story was, you're just building a personality-based business. And he said, it's just rubbish. And I was really hurt by that. I really loved my little business. He said, the reason it crashed was because it was personality-based. It's all about you. And he said, now let's work for the next 5 years, because that's how long the contract's for. I've helped you bail yourself out, given you a safe haven. You're working with me for 5 years. And I did. It's the best 5 business years I'd ever had to that date. Amazingly shrewd individual. Great coach. And a brilliant financial planner. He worked for Greg Middleton and then was MD of the Gerard Financial Services. And he taught me how to run a business, not a personality-driven financial planning practice. And what he taught me was, your intellectual property is the power of your business. And that's what we're going to talk about now, your intellectual property. So I want you to define for me what you think we mean by this phrase that people use without knowing what it means, intellectual property. So have a look at page 25, 23, sorry, and translate for me, what is all this about? What is intellectual property? Simon Holdsworth, you start me off. Fill in the boxes for me.
Systems that I use.
The systems you use, okay?
Platforms, reporting systems, that type of thing.
Okay, if you use a software platform, that's a system.
Yes.
Oh, and don't get lost with software platforms, they're just tools, they're just systems. They're not services. Don't get lost in it. It's the platform for a brilliant service, but it's not a service. It's a tool. Okay, we'll start discussing that in a minute. Okay? Anybody else tell me what intellectual property means?
Knowledge.
Okay, you need to start filling in those boxes now. Intellectual property. This is the juice, the nitro power of your business. Okay, any more?
Services.
Sorry, I didn't catch that. Sorry.
Services.
Services. Yeah, could be. The services that you provide. What that's unique?
Maybe if you design something in terms of a product or a service.
Okay.
A trademark.
Maybe a unique tool or product. We'll call that a resource, a unique resource. Okay? Anything else that could
experience,
be?
Experience. Your own experience.
Experience, yeah. Life experience as well as business experience. Coaches work a lot on life experience. Anything else?
The way you, let's say, report to a client, your written material that goes out to them, just the way you conduct a meeting, the way it's formatted.
Okay.
The way
I'm going to put that as communication.
The process with the client.
The manner which you communicate in writing, okay, that way of communication is part of your intellectual part. Anything else? Because if this is the power of your business, we need to get this and nail it.
The environment of the office.
The physical environment or another type of environment?
Both the feel and the physical.
Okay. Because Mark, you love this one, don't you, Mark? Physical environment,
yeah.
And the emotional environment of an office. Yeah. Life planners are really hot about this, setting the physical environment of the office. Anything else that could be something that's in your business that you could define as our special intellectual property?
Brand.
What do you mean by that?
Well, Coca-Cola is something special because it's Coca-Cola, not just the taste, it's Coca-Cola.
Okay. And what is its intellectual property?
The real thing.
Yeah. There's something else. The recipe. That's the intellectual property. It's not the can, it's not even the red can. It's the recipe that's the intellectual property that they own. So if they change the colour of the can, it'll still be what people want is they want the recipe. What their competitors want is their hands on the recipe. That's the power of Coca-Cola. And the rest is then physical branding, intellectual branding, emotional branding, the messages. Yes, it's a lovely cat. It's a lovely story, isn't it? It either is true or it's an urban myth, but who cares? It's a great story. Yeah, me too. Yeah, I heard the story too. Okay, so it could be the colour. It could be the can shape. It could be the recipe. Anything else?
The ethos and the values of the business.
The values of the business could be its intellectual property, particularly if it's a very different set of values. So let's pick a maverick. Give me a maverick in the industry.
Branson.
In this industry. I mean, he's a great maverick. Do you have any mavericks?
Branson.
Yeah, he's a real maverick, isn't he? So what's he ranting on about? Because he loves to rant. And he keeps asking me to rant with him. I will one day, but... What's he on about? Sorry?
He's ranting about service and... adding value.
Yeah, but he's ranting about something else quite passionately.
True.
What does he hate?
Product
wraps. Hates product providers and their wraps. Hates them with a vengeance. Thinks they're scum. Thinks they actually created all the problems that beset this industry. And I have to tell you, I probably feel the same too. Historically, the problems that the public perceive us to have, in my view, were originally created by... Who here used to sell pension schemes on a regular contribution basis that gave initial commission? Indemnified commission. Yeah? That's a product provider stat. And who here used to sell products within the brochure of which was the term initial units and accumulation units? Capital units. What a scam that was. What a horrendously immoral, dishonest scam. And I joined Gerard's, having sold a whole mass of executive pensions, appropriately, I thought, to company directors. I had about 150 company directors as clients. And I spent a year and a half unravelling all of those executive pensions and paying the price for it in revenue. Because I realised that they were all overfunded and the whole thing was a scam. It was just a nightmare. I nearly went under again, but I didn't. But I paid the price of being persuaded by the product providers that there really were capital units and there really were accumulation units, until an actuary sat me down in fits of laughter till she was nearly crying and said, "You don't really believe this garbage, do you? Because I used to work for Scottish Equitable. Let me tell you what really happens." And we believed it. So yeah, Paul Ronson, passion, okay? And that's his intellectual, part of his intellectual property. His maverick passion is what he is about. Okay, so, in the bottom box, now that you've written down all those things, okay, you really need to fill those top boxes in first. Don't walk away from here not understanding what your intellectual property is. So write down all those things first. Or it could be relationships as well. Quality of relationships with maybe alliance partners. What do I mean by alliance partners? Who could be an alliance partner to you?
Business introduced, an accountant.
Accountants, solicitors, yeah. Anybody else?
Underwriters.
Yeah.
So by then your marketing could be your IP then, couldn't it?
The way you market could be your intellectual property. Could be. Yeah. So, filling the top boxes. I used to have alliance relationships with an accountant, a solicitor and a company formation agent. And putting that in a brochure was what gave me my 7 referrals per week for a year. Till we had to stop it because we had too many referrals. 7 referrals that were ideal for our business, ideal, perfect clients, a week for a year. Actually lasted 2.5 years, but I didn't have to deal with the second half year. Gave that to my recruited IFAs.
With a company formation agent, is that effectively when you set up your own company, you always get a post through the door? Is that what you would do in the market?
Yeah, what happened was, let's say you were an information technology analyst working for BP. You then say, and this was a while ago when the market was really hot, I could earn double my revenue, my income, going freelance. You then walk out to an agent and they say, well, so how have you set yourself up? Well, what does that mean? Well, you're going to have a limited company. Well, I don't know anything about that. You're going to have an accountant. Don't know anything about that either. You've got to sort out your tax and don't know anything about that. Got to keep your book. Don't know anything about that. So they said, well, look, here's a booklet from Barrington Scarlett. Okay. In here are the forms to set up your limited company. You phone Barrington Scarlett's offices and they will give you a company name over the phone. It will be instantly reserved for you. You and I can then sign the contract, start next week's contract for 6 months at double your salary. Okay. Within a week, they'd have their company documents with them, plus their seal on their doorstep. And they would have sent the little forms off in the back of the brochure to me to justify getting all that. Within a week of that, they'd be in front of an accountant who would sort out their bookkeeping on the computer for them, do it all automated, and they'd know everything. And within a week of that, they'd be seeing me, and we'd be sitting down and talking about like life planning, financial planning, PHI, replacement insurance, all that kind of, you know, and all, just, it's like a machine. 7 a week, every week, because of the alliance partners. That was the intellectual property. And our business eventually dominated the market in the UK for about 3 years. We had something like 40 recruitment agents sending their people to us every month, 40, across the country. So we had alliance partners in Manchester, Birmingham and London. So we covered the country, and everything else was done by phone or on computers. Brilliant. Magic. Intellectual property. That was ours. Does that make sense? So now I put down the bottom box, what's your intellectual property that's so brilliant? Not your personality, what's your intellectual property in your business that powers your business? What's so special about your intellectual property that powers your business? Thank you.